Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon today. We have all sorts of new equipment. We're having fun testing it out and trying out all the video and the cameras. And got our engineer here. Mark, the producer, is here. It's a full house. We just need you. If you've got questions, call in. We would love to talk with you today. If you've been meaning to call or wanted to call, little shout. You know what? If you want to change your name, you totally can do that too. We're good with that. Yes.
We won't know.
We get fake names all the time.
Right. How do we know? You don't know.
Once in a while, I recognize somebody.
Or they're
telling us about their problem, and I say, oh, yeah, that's been a patient for the last.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes they may be using
their middle name or something.
That's true. I do mine online a lot.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because online, I don't want everybody bothering me. So yeah, I use my middle name.
Okay. Instead of my first and last names. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I tend to use Disney characters if I'm out and about and
Minnie.
Yes. Well, I haven't used that. Oh, I should use that one. I've used Ariel. One time I used Cinderella, and then when the pizza was ready to pick up, they said, "Cinderella, your pizza is ready." All the little kids were watching, and oh my goodness, I felt so embarrassed. I was like, "Oh my goodness."
I love that. I think I'll be Voldemort.
It was really fun, but you know, I'm not. You know, I was in a t-shirt, jeans,
that's
ponytail.
Not a Disney character,
I was like, sorry, little kids.
If they call Moldavort, your pizza is ready. He shall not be named. Every child in the place will run and hide.
There we go. So we would like.
They'll get their magic wands out and they'll be ready.
Yes, right. They will. We want to get a Cinderella calling in. If you get a little shy on the radio, feel free and you can be anonymous. That's okay. See, if I can do it, you can do it. So I haven't done it since I thought I probably broke some hearts there. And the little kids thought Cinderella was here, Mickey Mouse. But feel free to call in. Phone lines are open right now. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770 to get through. Our phone lines are open. Dr. Umat and Dr. Mixon here. Now, Dr. Umat, you had something that you wanted to talk about.
Sure.
And so let's dive right in.
Well, I like talking about what I've been doing this last few weeks. So let me tell you, I've been in the Tacoma office quite a bit lately. And so a shout out to our Tacoma team. Woo-hoo. It's really been fun. Other than the drive, it's really fun. Once I get there and once I'm back home, the rest is perfect. I've enjoyed being there. I've enjoyed meeting all of you. So it's been great spending time with you. And a shout out to our new doctor, Dr. Jake Felice. He's settling right in and very happy to spend some time with him, get to know him a little bit. Love his mannerism, love his attitude, love his hunger for knowledge and the way he takes care of his patients. And I'm super excited that, you know, he's launching his career with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, I gave Felice a talk that I normally say for our new female practitioners.
Okay.
Because we're dealing with people who, by and large, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s. And when we move their hormone levels back to where they were at 25, sometimes, especially the guys, kind of stir up feelings and emotions they have not had for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've got a young, attractive female doctor, Mm-hmm. I have to warn her that, you know, she's going to be talking to guys that are suddenly coping with feelings they haven't dealt with since adolescence.
Okay.
And I have to warn them that once in a while, we may get a patient who hits on you.
Okay. We never had that conversation, Jerry.
No, we didn't. I didn't warn you. I let you discover it for yourself. But now I know enough that I warn my young female physicians. And because it's just an issue. And you can't blame the guys. You know, they've gone for the last 20 years or longer, and those feelings had faded away, and all of a sudden they're back. And some guys have, most guys tolerate it quite well, but a few guys have difficulty coping with the sudden resurgence of quasi-adolescence. And so I do warn our younger, attractive females that, you know, don't get upset, don't get mad, just recognize that we... You know, this is a hazard of this practice.
Mm.
It's because of what we do.
Yeah, so you had to have this conversation with Jake?
Because Jake is an especially handsome young man. You know, he's a grown-up, 50-ish, you know, big broad shoulders, you know, handsome face. And so I had to say, Jake, this is a talk I normally give to the girls, but... You're a good-looking young guy.
Are you being protective of your doctors again?
I am protective of my doctors. I'm sorry, but you know, I care about my doctors. And so I have to warn you, Mr. Jake, you are going to have the occasional female patient.
Hit on him?
That is going to be a little extra friendly towards you. And you're going to need to learn to keep a professional distance. You know, this is not a problem most doctors have with people in our age group, but because of what we do... It's kind of a unique worry.
Okay. Well, he's doing just fine, and the Tacoma team is wonderful, and they're all protecting him and taking care of him. And we had a chance to talk about some of the things that we offer here at Longevity, and we're gearing up now to do another fair for the gallery test. So cancer, again, on top of my mind as we prepare and plan for early detection for cancer and then what to do about it. Because the statistics are that if the cancer cells have spread from the organ of origin to outside of that initial organ of origin, then the risk for mortality increases exponentially. So 2 out of 10 will die when it is within the organ in 5 years, whereas if it is spread, then 9 out of 10 will die within 5 years. And so that is a huge statistic that scares me a lot. And when we have the technology today, we're making immense progress in leaps and bounds in blood test technology. There's a new test for Alzheimer's detection that has been put out recently. And for cancer cells, we're really, the technology is incredible in picking up cells that have cancerous DNA, cell-free DNA, it's called. And then the technology tries to map those cell-free DNA to where the origin is, where are they coming from. And then they can tell the physician, if there is no signal detected, that's the best result that you're looking for. But if there is a positive signal detected, then you want to know where it's coming from, because you can't, you know where to start looking. So in our clinic, we've diagnosed colon cancers, we've diagnosed breast, and we've diagnosed prostate for our patients. And these were early, and patients were helped because they got the treatment early. Now, the fear is always with something that is not that easy to detect, like, for example, liver, pancreatic cancer, biliary duct cancer, and their mortality is very high because they're detected late. And by the time they're detected, they've spread outside the organ of origin, and the survival time is very little. And in fact, there is no treatment protocols to help these people. And so if we can pick up early, which is what Galleri is noticing, that as they are picking up these cancers early, oncologists are now trying to find cures because they didn't have this problem before. They weren't picking them up that early. Now they're picking them up so early that they're coming up with protocols to help manage these patients.
And the delightful thing here is that the Galleri test is not for people that have symptoms that make them think they might have a cancer. This is for folks who think they're healthy.
Yeah.
You're walking along, you feel you're perfectly healthy, good. Go get the Galleri test.
Yeah, it's a screen,
because
right?
We screen for 50 different cancers.
Yeah.
And if we can find a cancer before you have any hint that you've got it,
yeah,
we've got a much better chance of curing it.
That's right.
If we wait till you know you've got it because something is seriously amiss,
Yeah.
You're usually in deep doo-doo.
Right.
So, you know, let's find it while you're healthy, while you think you're healthy.
That's right.
Let's find that cancer. I went and took the test recently.
Yeah.
No indication I've got a cancer.
Yeah.
Indeed. My gallery test was negative.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's reassuring.
It is very reassuring.
There are 50 cancers now. I know within the last year, I had no cancerous DNA in my bloodstream
at all. That's a key point, 1 year, because we can pick up the signal about 300 days before any other diagnostic test will become positive, which means that it's that early. It's that, you know, even the diagnostic tests can't pick it up. And then the point is that you should repeat the test annually to make sure that you stay negative and that there's nothing else brewing somewhere.
Yep. But, you know, it is $1,200.
Yeah.
It's $1,250.
We will be dropping the price, Jerry.
I hope the price is going down over time. It usually does. You know,
yeah.
A brand new test is more expensive. And then over time, as more and more people take it,
yeah,
we can start dropping the price.
Well, for the promotion, we're dropping it.
Okay. And, well, you know, if they give us a special deal, they give us a special deal.
And we are giving our patients a special deal.
Right. Well, the fact is we're doing so many of them.
Yes.
You know, we're doing a lot more than most clinics do.
That's right.
But the key here is we want to find things before you have any hint that you've got a problem. That's the time to find a cancer, before you're sick.
Yeah. And then, you know, the big thing is you want not just to do the gallery test, but you really want to do the longevity panel with it, because you really want to find out what is happening to your body as well, and what other steps can you take to be proactive in prevention, as we've been saying all morning. And then if you do both of them together, we are going to give you a free bottle of foundations.
Okay. Sounds good.
So very excited about that.
All right.
All right. Well, should we take a break?
Let's take a break.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break right now.
We're going
now
to the beach, folks. The rest of you are kind of stuck at home.
But you better be back, Dr. Mixon, in about 1 minute. We'll be back. Lots of calls on the line. We are going to be talking about hormones, anxiety, and more. Stay close. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
I'm picking up. She's giving me excitations. I'm backing up vibrations. She's giving me excitations.
Wait a minute.
Oh, welcome back.
I love good vibrations.
Yes, you do. Oh, the doctors are here. Dr. Samira Umat, Dr. Jerry Mixon, you're tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine, and we are back with lots of callers, so we better dive right in. Headed to Wallingford. Michael on the line. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, Michael. Where is Wallingford?
Part of
Seattle. Hi there. Good morning.
Someone just
started to wake up a little, but can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Oh, so my daughter lives out of the country, and she's 42 years old, and I'm trying to be her mini longevity clinic here. She's had been overweight, gaining weight for the last several years. She's 42 years old, 50, 60 pounds overweight.
Okay.
And she just can't lose weight. And she even went on a keto diet very strictly and couldn't lose any substantial weight. And you've said in the past that that could be an androgen problem with female hormones.
It can be, yeah. We call it polycystic ovarian disease. And those women tend to have a weight problem. They have more of what we refer to as a male escutcheon. That is, they have hair up to their belly button frequently. They have trouble controlling their blood sugars. And they tend to have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And infertility.
Yeah.
So, but
okay. Well, I got the comprehensive life extension. We ordered the female panel for her.
Uh-huh.
And when she was in town We did that just a few weeks ago. And I'm getting a little confused about the results and the ratios. You've talked about how the normal female testosterone should be 1.5-2 times the estrogens. But I'm also getting mixed up on the units. So let me read her result. Her estrogens total was 59, and that was in picograms. And her testosterone, not free, but was 5, and that was in nanograms. And I know the math. I've done all the conversions, but it's just not does that make any sense? And when you talk about the normal ratios, are you talking about the same units?
Yeah, if you put them in the same units. See, normally, normally estrogen is reported out in picograms per milliliter, and testosterone is reported out in nanograms per deciliter.
That's exactly what I'm looking at.
Yeah, and so you have to divide the estrogen by 10, okay, or multiply the testosterone by 10 to take a look at the relative ratios. But it also depends on where in the cycle, in her menstrual cycle, was the blood drawn. Because women's testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone are highly variable by where they are in their cycle. Estrogen and testosterone peak just before ovulation. So just about 2 weeks after the last menstruation begins is when the estrogen and testosterone tend to peak. Progesterone peaks about a week or 10 days before the period starts.
And that's, makes the next question is she's on the birth control pills. So how does that affect the time of the test?
It affects a lot because the birth control pills are hormones themselves. Some birth control pills have a lot of estrogen in them. Other birth control pills have virtually no estrogen, but have a lot of a synthetic progesterone, such as something like Northendrone. And so those are going to alter your values dramatically.
Yeah, and the purpose of the birth control pill is to damp down ovulation. So they're not going to let estrogen rise too high.
That's right.
But they're going to keep it at a steady state, and then they fall. Sometimes it's just sugar pills. So the timing is very important, as you said, not just for the cycle, but also the pill that you know.
Which birth control pill she's on.
Day of the cycle she's at and which pill she took on that day of the cycle.
Because, you know, the pills and birth control pill are numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, et cetera. And the last half of the pills frequently have no estrogen in them at all. And then after you get the progesterone component drops out.
Just sugar.
Shortly before they're supposed to have their period. And so there through their cycle, the pills are just sugar pills. Even though they look the same.
Right.
So
Sorry, you were talking about total estrogens. Whereas we measure estradiol levels.
Yeah. And then total estrogens are different from estradiol. When we're talking about estrogen and when we're measuring estrogens, we're measuring estradiol. But then once the estradiol is produced, about 2/3 of it is converted to an estrone of some form in the liver. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to know is how much real estradiol they've got as opposed to total estrogens.
And yeah, that shows all here, too. So when you talk about the typical ratios that a normal adult female should have for the estrogens, are you talking about total or estradiol or something
We're talking
different?
About estradiol versus versus total testosterone. And then we're talking, again, about people that are not on birth control pills. This is what a woman's own body would produce without the interference of the birth control pills.
Okay, but when you say a normal woman would have 2 times the testosterone, typically, of estrogens, is that, are you talking about total estrogens?
No, we're talking about estradiol versus...
Okay.
versus total testosterone.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. And the free testosterone probably doesn't matter that much. You just answered that.
It matters, but free testosterone will normally run about 1-2% of the total. Okay.
Thank you so. Oh, one little last thing. On the, I was getting confused between the picos and the nanograms because 1,000 picograms is a nanogram. So I was multiplying the difference by 1,000, and you were saying times 10. So
right, you got to remember the denominator also counts, and so per milliliter versus per watt. Okay.
Oh. Thank you. Bingo. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate
you're welcome, you. Sir. Okay. Bye. calls by engineering types that want to have all of the units down flat.
Yes. I've experienced that in my practice here as well. Boeing has many engineers that are very exacting.
We got our Boeing engineers in here and they come in with spreadsheets that go back 10 years.
Yes.
So their office visits are different from the arts and crafts group.
Yes.
All right. Well, we got another caller on the line. We are headed to Seattle, right here in Seattle, and Renee on the line. Hi, Renee. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hi. Hi, thank you. My question is about compound of estriol cream. Can you apply that to the face?
Sure.
And absolutely, how would you use it, just a little bit?
Well, I'll tell you, I am cautious about estrogens on the face. Because it depends on your genetic background.
Oh, okay.
Okay, if you are Asian or South Mediterranean, you have a high risk of getting melasma. That is these dark splotches on your cheeks from the high estrogen load.
But that's predominantly estradiol.
Yes.
And she said estriol.
So,
estriol. I hope,
And so estriol is less less potent on the skin than estradiol, which is the ovarian hormone.
Correct. But we have to be careful because comes in higher concentrations than use estradiol in.
But estriol
is
actually an anti-cancer estrogen that is produced in high quantities during pregnancy.
Yeah.
But it has less biological effect of the things we normally connect to estrogens. So I've never seen estriol cause melasma. Have you?
No, I have not seen estriol cause melasma. In fact, I use estriol a lot when cancer is a risk factor, when we have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question is,
when you were pregnant, did you get the mask of pregnancy?
No.
Okay. See, if you did not get it when you were pregnant, when you had very, very high estrogen levels, then you're not likely to get that complication when you put the cream on your face. Because you didn't get it when your ovaries were kicking out enormous amounts of estrogen with pregnancy. So you're probably safe enough to do that.
And does it matter, if you're on thyroid medication, does it affect the absorption if you use them at close to the same time? Or
Not really, no. The main factors in absorbing estrogen through the skin is the concentration of estrogen in the cream, which skin you put it on, and the face and neck are very thin, and they have a very rich blood supply, so you absorb it well through the face and the neck. And then, of course, how much skin you apply it to. There's difference in people who take it on a fingertip and rub it around their eyes versus the people like me who, wet their hands, put it on, and then smear it all over my entire, from the collarbones up.
Take a bath in it.
I lather that progesterone on my face because I want thin, smooth, stretchy skin that doesn't sag.
Yeah.
And progesterone on the face protects you against that.
But that's progesterone. That's progesterone, not estrogen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't raise my estrogen. I just raise my progesterone.
That can go anywhere. But, the other thing I would also say is it's kind of warm right now, so make sure you use sunblock. So if you're putting estriol in the morning, then make sure you use a good sunblock, too.
Okay, that's good to know, Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And then the other thing is, I don't know how they're measuring her levels or telling you what, you know, how to adjust your cream and how to go up and down, because it's very hard to measure estrogen.
Are you one of our patients, or are you seeing someone else?
No, I see somebody else,
Okay. So, again, they should be checking your hormone levels about every 3 months. And if they're only doing it once or twice a year, you need to change doctors.
Okay. I'll remember that. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
And good luck.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great question, though. Yeah.
Yeah, very good question.
Yeah, great question.
All right. We hear the music, so we're going to take a quick break. Say hi to the engineer. He's right behind me. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We have Tom, Anton, and Ron has a special congratulations. It's all coming up on Leading Edge Medicine. Here's that number to get through, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. With Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Umat here, Dr. Mixon, and your calls. Here's the number, 800-465-8770. And we are headed now to Kent. We have Tom on the line. Welcome, Tom. And Tom, you're a longevity patient, right?
That's correct. I've been with you since 2006. Gone through all my doctors. Dr. Mixon was my doctor until he quit seeing people. Then I had Todd Killebrew and Chris Prochaska, and now I have someone I've never met before, Jake Felice.
Felice.
Dr. Felice. We use the Italian pronunciation.
He's Italian.
Oh, boy, he's Italian. Watch out.
Anyway, the last year and a half, I've suddenly developed depression and anxiety, and I'm being treated by my PCP. She's got me on some medication, but she suggested that to get things moving better, I'd be better off if I saw a psychiatrist. I'm interested in the psychiatrist rather than a psychologist, because they can, you know, they can write prescriptions and stuff like that.
Sure. And,
and anyway, I've been on this, they've got me on lorazepam for the anxiety. And this other thing is ESCITALOPAMCOXALATE. That's for the depression. And I'm supposed to do that for about 3 or 4 weeks, and I get no relief from either one of them. I think a lot of this thing started. I'm a runner, and I broke my femur in 2019, so it's hard for me to. They finally put a hip replacement in there, and so. My exercise has really been cut down, so that's, I'm sure, some of the depression. But my problem is trying to locate a psychiatrist. I do most of my stuff at Valley Medical, and they've been shut down after COVID there for that kind of stuff like that. Do you have any idea how I would find one? The wife's been looking up on... you know, I don't even care if insurance cut. You know, I just need to speak to somebody.
All right.
Well, your primary care provider, who's recommending a psychiatrist, they don't know of anybody?
But she does most of her stuff through Valley Medical, and they're kind of shut down for. They're not accepting anybody after the COVID. They've been been hit too hard.
Really?
That's odd.
Yes.
All right, because it's been a year or more. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we don't normally do a lot of psychiatric interventions here. So I know a neuropsychiatrist up in Woodinville who's pretty darn good, but I don't know if he's accepting patients right now.
Yeah, that's my problem. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to stay with my PCP on these drugs. And if I don't get, an improvement, I mean, I'm kind of going nuts, but...
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about what we can do in our purview, okay?
Okay, I mean,
we are not psychiatrists, and so, we don't do psychiatric medications per se. On the other hand, the hormones do have a significant impact on your mood and how you feel and perceive yourself in the world. So, obviously, I'm sitting here on the radio. I don't really, know your real identity, nor do I have access to your laboratory values. But in general, if you have anxiety, I'd want to make sure that your pregnenolone and your progesterone were in adequate range, because both of those decrease anxiety. The only problem is progesterone, if it's too high, can actually make you moody and trigger some depression. The other component, though, is the testosterone. Testosterone and dihydrotestosterone are both significant antidepressant hormones. Testosterone and dihydrotestosterone both make a man feel self-confident and able to handle virtually any challenge that comes their way. Low testosterone men often have depression and anxiety.
Right.
So first thing I'd say is, as far as your longevity doctor goes, go in and make sure that you are being carried with your anabolic hormone, your testosterone, your DHEA, your dihydrotestosterone, at the upper range of the range in which we carry people. We've got a range where we normally use. Make sure you're at the upper portion of that safety range, not at the bottom. And it may just be that raising you up, let's say a total testosterone or a free testosterone in the range of, we normally go 150 to 180, but normal goes up to as high as 210. So for you, we might consider raising that up in the range of 180 to 200 instead of 150 to 180. And give you that little extra boost in self-confidence and stress tolerance. Okay?
But I've always been high. I just got checked in May, and all of my things look real good. In fact, I'm sometimes I'm a little bit higher on testosterone but like I've been with you for many years. I get the blood test usually twice a year, and pretty extensive. I have everything done, and it's just that. I can give you my name off the air, and you can look at
I don't have access to your medical records here in the studio, so
no, I understand
it wouldn't help me much. But what we need to do is to have you contact your longevity doctor and sit down with them an extra time or two. If you're only being seen twice a year, we normally see people four times a year.
I'm not scheduled to see him until November.
Okay, well, we can always schedule you for late August or September instead, You don't have to wait till November. And that's the advantage of being a member of longevity is you can have as many visits with our doctors as you need for what we do. We don't want to see you for bronchitis and ankle pain, but when it comes to this sort of thing, we'll see you. If we have to see you every month, we'll see you every month. Okay, we don't charge extra for that. The other thing that raises the red flag to me is, because of your injury, you're not able to exercise the way you normally exercise. But that tells me you still need to exercise. You just need to change the way you exercise.
Well, I exercise, as best I can. I do, I walk. I can run about 500 yards, then I have to go to a walking thing. But I mean, prior to this thing, I was running marathons and halfathons and stuff like that. It just kind of breaks my heart that I can't function like that anymore. Nor will I be able, because I'm 85.
No, I understand, and you know, we're going to have to modify it, but it may be you need to go to a gym and take a rowing or some swimming, things that will give you a total body workout without stressing those damaged areas of your, you know, of your body that can't tolerate it anymore. Okay? Because exercise raises endorphins. It raises the feel-good hormones in our brain.
Right.
And so vigorous exercise is an important part of depression therapy. In fact, most studies are finding that vigorous exercise works as well or somewhat better than the antidepressant medications.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Yeah. Part of the problem with depressed people is the depression means they have such low emotional energy, they have trouble exercising. But if you can get them exercising, you'll often find that the exercise by itself works as well as any medication that we use.
Well, I keep trying to push myself. It's just that, I'm, getting pretty old now, and I don't like it.
My friend, if you like the changes of getting old, you're crazy as a loon.
Yeah.
Come on. Nobody likes what's
it,
happening as they're getting old.
Well, listen, I really appreciate everything. You know, years ago when you told me that you said, Tom, you know, I got you as a patient and I got five other patients that are all millionaires. He says, and you said, that's it. I'm going to have to let you go. And that's when you turned me over to Todd. He was a real nice guy. I kind of miss him. But
so do I. But, he moved to Virginia.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to him, He's got a nice bunch of land out there and so forth.
Bought himself a farm in Virginia.
There you go. I'm just glad, Dr. Mixon, you didn't say that the doctor bought the farm. He's happy and doing well in Virginia.
Right. Well, actually, right now, I don't treat anybody. I am so deep into the research world that I don't have time for patients at all.
I completely understand that.
Yeah, but I do make Samara see patients still.
That's right, he does.
That's right. Oh, Tom, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you for calling in, sir.
We'll see you here at the clinic.
Yep. Good luck, my friend.
I'll get a hold of Dr. Felice.
Dr. Felice, and don't just see him twice a year until you get this under control. Mm-hmm. We want to see you a lot more frequently, okay?
Okay, I'll do that. Thanks for all your help.
All right, take care, sir.
Very good.
Bye-bye.
Hi there. You're tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette with along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat taking your calls. We're going to stay right here in the Seattle area. We've got Anton on the line. Good morning, Anton.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about I'm scheduled for a double inguinal hernia surgery in a couple of weeks, and I'm very concerned about going through with it because I am quite old and I have atrial fibrillation, I'm on blood thinner, and I'm wondering what the risks are and whether I should even go through with the surgery. My hernias don't particularly bother me, except they're rather large, and I had them for some time. And so anyway, I'm concerned about the risk due to my age and also since I'm on blood thinner.
Okay. Well, inguinal hernia surgery is very straightforward. The complications and risks are very, very low. This is a surgery that back in my country doctor days, I've done hundreds of times, so I'm very familiar with it.
He has bilateral hernia, and he said they're pretty large.
Yeah, and it's basically because of his age, he's lost so much muscle mass that those inguinal canals have just basically dilated and allowed a fair bit of bowel to push down. But that's exactly the guy who is the highest risk of having a bowel obstruction.
Obstruction, exactly.
And, if he should get a bowel obstruction, then we've got a surgical emergency.
Correct.
And risks go way, way up.
That's right.
So these are things that we want to fix early. We want to fix them when we don't have an emergency situation and where, anesthesia can be quite light. The You are one of those people that I think should talk to the anesthesiologist before the surgery. You talk to your surgeon, have him put you in touch with the anesthesiologist. Get an appointment to talk to anesthesia before the morning of surgery. Because what you want to ask him is it possible to carry you very lightly with the systemic anesthesia and have your surgeon supplement it perhaps with some local anesthesia? He can use some regional or area blocks just with a local anesthetic in addition to what the anesthesiologist has given you systemically. And the combination of the two means neither one needs to be very heavy because you're approaching it from two different directions. So tell the anesthesiologist about your worries. That's his specialty. And tell him you'd like to be carried as light as practical due to your age.
Yeah. And what is the first anesthesia? Is there a name for it?
Well, I don't know, you know, what he has in mind. The deepest anesthesia are the inhalation anesthetics where you breathe the, you know, the volatile gases. And those can take you quite deep. And then there is the kind of mixed where they give you some intravenous sedation or a short-acting benzodiazepine that'll kind of put you, make you very sleepy. And then they touch you much lighter with the inhalation anesthetic because you don't need as much. Okay.
I see.
And then there's some others that they can use that are just intravenous that they can turn on and off very quickly. So for short procedures, the intravenous ones can take you down in a hurry, but then they can wake you up in a matter of minutes and have very little hangover effect. So, again, this is a medical specialty, and the anesthesiologists are the expert in it. So that's who you need to chat with before your surgery and let them know your concerns.
Yeah, I'm scheduled. I will have a consultation with the anesthesiologist on the 14th, and my surgery is scheduled, I believe, on the 21st of August. So, but anyhow, how long does surgery like that take? I mean, that's a double surgery one on each side.
Yeah, normally, when I was doing a single inguinal hernia, it took me as long to get my hands washed, gowned, and draped as it did to do the surgery. Actual surgical time itself is probably in the neighborhood of 30 minutes, 40 minutes at the outside, unless you get in there and there's a lot of adhesions and scar tissue tying things down, in which case you got to go slower and it takes more time to do a good, safe job. So if you don't have a lot of scar tissue and adhesions, these are pretty straightforward surgeries. They don't usually take a lot of time.
The hernias are rather large, almost the size of a goose egg.
Okay, but see, the poking out, it just says there's a lot of bowel pushing out through the defect. But all you do is take your fingers and you push that stuff right back into your belly. And then when you do the inguinal hernia, you're working from the inside. You've got the belly open and then you're just finding that inguinal ligament and you find the best tissue on the other side. You pull the two together and sew them and close up that defect that the bowel has been pushing through. And you got to leave enough room for the spermatic cord to go through, but it's not that big a deal. Unless there's a lot of scar tissue and adhesions, it's not a difficult surgery. Okay, it's one of the earliest procedures that a young surgeon learns. So,
I had no surgery in that area. If they can't push the bowel back into the abdomen, how can they cut open without damaging the intestines?
Well, again, we make the incision above the inguinal ring where there is no risk to the bowel that's pushing out. We know where the bowel comes out. We know that it follows the inguinal canal down. So you start your incision above that, And then you want to just kind of reach your fingers in there. You push everything down inside. You make sure it's out of the way. And then you extend your incisions. Again, it's not rocket science. Okay. As abdominal surgeries go, this is a pretty simple one.
Well, that sounds encouraging because I'm scared to death.
No, not death. You may be scared, but you're not going to die from this. You're forbidden to die, okay?
as far as my atrial fibrillation is concerned, could that affect the heart in any way, the anesthesia and the whole process?
Again, he's going to watch your cardiac status carefully. That's why you want the consult with the anesthesiologist in advance. He is a specialist in putting people to sleep. So, you know, just tell him all your worries, tell him all of your problems, or her, since these days most anesthesiologists tend to be female, right? But tell her all your worries and problems, except maybe financial issues. You don't want to tell him about your bank account problems. But all your medical problems, let her know, and she'll come up with a safe plan for you. Remember, above all, do no harm is the watchword in medicine. And that's especially the case with anesthesiologists. So trust your doctor, give her all the facts, and then relax and let her do a job. You'll be fine.
I take a lot of supplements, so I probably have to cut those out.
Skip them for a few days before. Yes, you don't want to take anything that might be causing you to extend your bleeding times. You know, your surgeon wants the field as dry as possible. We don't want any oozing and bleeding.
So, all right. For example, I take fish oil, CoQ10, turmeric, 300 milligrams, vitamin C, 1,000 milligram vitamin E, vitamin D3, 5,000 IU, resveratrol, 500 milligram, and MCT oil. I probably have to eliminate all of these. Apparently, they can have some effect on the blood.
Certainly the omegas and the medium triglycerides, you should stop those a week or so in advance. The rest of them, a couple of days, will be fine.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. It's going to be good, right, Anton, well, and we wish you the best. I hate to cut you off. We just got more callers waiting in line.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your help. I appreciate
it.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Anton. We're going to stay right here in Seattle. Mary is on the line. Mary, thank you for your patience. How can we help you today?
Hi. I've had three different types of cancers. I've had surgical on all of them. I've never had to have any extra treatment for any of them. I come out perfectly clean. It's been 30 years, 17 years, 15 years, and now I'm starting to get skin cancers. Is there a relationship to the cancer?
Yes. We have an adage in medicine that says cancer formers form cancers.
Yeah.
You know, getting a cancer is essentially a failure of your immune response. Our immune system is designed to find and destroy anything that isn't us. And so they search out bacteria and viruses and destroy them. When we mutate a cell and it becomes a malignancy, it's no longer a healthy version of us. And our immune system is supposed to find and kill that cancer before it actually grows into a tumor. It's supposed to destroy it when it's just a few cells. But some people's immune system miss. And so people who have formed one cancer are at very high risk of forming other cancers. And you've had three. So for you to get fourth and fifth would not shock me. So you're one of those people we need to watch very carefully and very closely. And so, yes, especially if you're like me and had a lot of sun exposure in your youth, you are a setup for skin cancers.
You know, yeah. Being raised in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, you do get that.
Absolutely. I remember my mother saying, "Jerry, put down that book and get out and get some good, healthy sunshine." You know, thanks,
right,
Mom.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's your fault for not putting a sunblock on, Jerry.
We never heard of sunblock in those days.
Back then, I don't know.
We did Crisco so that we would fry on both sides, for God's sakes. We had aluminum foil to direct the sun at our skin from every angle.
Wow.
We thought
the opinion on the expressed may not be that of our show. Wow.
Now, the cancer blood test that you were talking about, would that show up on anything like this or what?
Yeah, you're one of those people that should be doing the Galleri test frequently. Okay, it's not necessarily going to be so good for skin cancers, but you know, just because you had three cancers, you're at high risk of a lot of cancers. So if I were your hubby, I'd be nagging you to go get your Galleri test at least every other year. Okay.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know. I'm curious because all of a sudden that started to multiply a little bit.
I understand. I just had a little skin cancer in an old scar of mine. I had a gunshot wound to the right forearm way back in the 60s. And I actually developed a little squamous cell skin cancer in the scar from the old wound.
Oh, my word.
So we had it taken out about 3 months ago. So now I have a scar inside my scar.
Don't brag about it.
No, it's just one of those things. You know, we've lived a long time. Yeah. We use our body. And when we were young and dumb, we spent a lot of time in the sunshine because we thought it was the right thing to do.
Exactly. All righty. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, ma'am. Go get that Galleri test and whack off those skin cancers while they're small.
Okay, we'll do it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Very good. Wow, what a show here. And with all of our new equipment and cameras and Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat and engineer and everybody in the studio, thank you for that. But we are going to say goodbye for this week, but we'll be back next week. It's Leading Edge Medicine live in the studio for you. And every week getting a little bit closer to being live on the radio and on YouTube, on your video here, just weeks away from that. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next time on Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Have a great weekend.